I'm home, yo, and get your high. It's cold today. We got up to 70 degrees yesterday, and this, today so far, it's just barely above freezing. Okay, Mississippi. It's got to be the strangest place, weather-wise, certainly, I've ever lived. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for your support. And once again, incredibly grateful and proud of this Sangha. You guys are amazing. If you're new here, please take a moment to like and subscribe to this video, simply to help our Sangha play nice in the YouTube algorithm, so that when people are seeking out information on Buddhism, we'll come up in the results. That's very helpful for this Sangha and actually, I'm kind of proud of the largesse of this resource to help practice Buddhism correctly. Not only all of the videos on this channel, we're about 1,000 of them, but also the website, lots of free information there. And you're connected then to the bookstore, the mandala store, everything meant to encourage, inspire confidence, and give you answers. You know, when we dig deeply into our lives, which is, Buddhism isn't a superficial thing. It unearths, if you will, every aspect of potential in your karmic freight train of energies, right? And sometimes we get caught off guard, and or we see changes that stun us. And so it's inevitable. We're going to have questions. We're going to have how something works. Does it work this way? Are we seeing what we think we're seeing? Blah, blah, blah. So there's always questions. That's the reason for this resource, right? That's the main reason. The secondary reason is that a lot of information out there is just terrible. It's been contorted to a supposed Western audience that can't think beyond religious terminology. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to talk down to anyone. This is about straight conversation, talking about Buddhism, not trying to color it any way, because when you make that effort, and I think a lot of these scholars made that effort, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they were doing it in order to appeal to a Western audience. But they do a great disservice to Buddhism, because all they do is confuse matters. So this is all straight talk, directly addressing the Buddhist way of thinking without all that rhetorical baloney, okay? And we are nearing the end of this biography by our current author. And being as he was, and it may be surprising to note, you know, this was a Japanese scholar, very educated man, but he was educated within the boundaries of Western institutions. This came from Harvard. So he had a lot of people putting in their two cents on this before they would publish it. This was published by Harvard. So not a whole lot of independence there. And as a result, and it seems to me, as I move closer and closer to the end results, the end discussions of this biography, there seems to be more and more of this Western rhetoric pushed into there. But I'm doing my best to shelter you from it, because it's bewildering, quite honestly. So we want to know not only what Shakyamuni taught and his culminating teachings of the Lotus Sutra, but we want to know clearly Nietzsche's mind in all of this, as he's our contemporary mentor, exemplar, the person, as we've read in this biography, and in many Gosho's that we already have gone through. His exhortation for you and I to, and me, sorry, to follow his example, to do as Nietzsche did, to practice in the way, embody this teaching of the Lotus Sutra, not just mimic it, not just, as it says in the sutra itself, read, recite, copy, disseminate, but Nietzsche took it to heart that, as in many things, especially in our time, everything is superficial. Everything is at the skin, yeah? Appearances, identity politics, all of this superficial stuff. What about the core? What's going on deep within your life, right? Do you even know? Are you so busy being superficial, worrying about how others see you or how you're supposed to behave? What's the picture of how you're supposed to behave? I'm supposed to be a person like this because I'm supposed to have a job like this. I have to have a car like this or wear makeup like this. Who are you? Deeply, cellularly. That's where Buddhism takes place, right? Essential blood, marrow, self. What am I really? What is the engine that creates my life? This superficial stuff? Yeah. I'll drag the bag along. That's samsara. But what is my real attitude? How do I think? Not what do I think. How is it that I'm conscious? What do I do with this sentient mind? Do I just pile it up with ideas of appearance? Or do I actually live my potential in this life? And for Nietzsche, this was a critical question. That if I'm going to practice Shakyamuni's ultimate teaching, I have to practice it deep within my very energetic core, right? The thing that makes me, that constructs me, not attitudes and superficial ideas of how I appear, right? You got to get honest with your own truth. That's what's essential. And knowing that, everything else becomes not so stressful, not so anxiety, because it's honest. What honestly am I living? And by doing that, everything we experience with our minds, with our lives, becomes equanimous, becomes amazing, becomes supportive. Why have I been avoiding this all this time? Well, that's the nature of the commitment to this practice. It all comes from within self-realization, manifesting our true nature. That's what Buddha is, that cognition, that awareness, that awakening of the true engine of life. So that's very important to Nietzsche, and it's core to what Shakyamuni was teaching. But for you and me, in this age of human evolution, sentient evolution, there's so much distraction from it that we can forget what we actually are experiencing altogether. So all the more important that we get this point. Not doing so in the parlance of Buddhism is an error. It's an error that precipitates all of our pain and anxiety and stress, in a word, suffering. And for Nichiren, as we continue with the author here, the sense of this error lay heavy upon Nichiren's mind in view of the approaching danger. In medieval Japan, the Mongols were threatening because Japan was just in disarray, a bunch of egos running things and arguing within even the ruling class, as we've already read. And the Mongols came in and decimated the outer islands of Japan, just slaughtered people. Very brutal, the Mongols were. And they were threatening to come into the mainland of Japan. So, continuing, Japan would certainly suffer from the invaders, as the Western Islands had been devastated. Was not this because the nation still remained blind to the truth of Buddhism? Was not he himself chiefly or solely responsible for its blindness? Nichiren took this on as a failure. That he, remember, Nichiren addressed his perspicacity, his understanding of Shakyamuni's Lotus Sutra as an exegesis for Japan long before these invasions. Because he was surrounded by people who were using Buddhism as a social tool, as a manipulative tool, as a political tool, as a tool of profit, ego, and control of the populace, just like religions do. And for Nichiren, that was unthinkable. That's not Buddhism. That they shouldn't even call themselves Buddhists. They're using the words and the sermons of Shakyamuni and twisting them and adding their own, like the Shinran sect, right? Or Shingon. You never remember the difference between those two. And Nichiren couldn't tolerate it. So he thought, if I'm to emancipate people in Japan who are just living in this super authoritarian dictatorship, the people are just going to do what they're told. So I could go one by one, door to door, and go, look, that's not how to practice Buddhism. And he might convert a few, but be much more efficient in a short human lifetime, right? To go to the top, convert the elites. If not change the minds of these, what they call them, bastard sects, you know, the Nembutsu and the Zen and the Pure Land and the Shinran and all of these different sects, he could go to those leaders of those sects and groups and change their minds, but they weren't having it. No, are you kidding? I got a seat at the table, dude. I'm important. Piss off. Right? They didn't want to hear it. So Nichiren set his gaze on the elite, the ruling clans. But the ruling clans, unfortunately, Nichiren found out the hard way, they really liked their power. So it took a couple of exiles and a threat, almost beheading, for some of those leaders in those clans to think, you know, this Nichiren kid, he's He's got a point. Maybe we should listen to him. So finally, later in his life, Nietzsche gets to come back, but he's not without a lot of opposition, right? But now people, and they have been slowly converting to his thinking. Oddly enough, a lot of the enforcers, right? The samurai, the brute force that threatened life and death every day, owned and run by those elite, a lot of them were converting to Nichiren. And so, you know, the samurai weren't stupid people. They weren't just peasants, uneducated. They were in the halls of power. And they saw the merit of Nichiren's doctrines. And so Nichiren was slowly converting the nation, but too slow, right? It wasn't preparing the nation of Japan through its leadership to get a clue. And so Nichiren felt responsible for that. Would not all these perils have been averted if he had established the way, the true way of Buddhism, the Sangha in the nation, of the nation, to practice correctly? Right? The Kaidan? Quote, all the sufferings that befall my fellow beings are, after all, my own sufferings, end quote. Well, that's a different thing altogether, isn't it? What he's lamenting is the condition of things. That whether he's responsible or not, which we could say that's a little over the top, he certainly empathizes with a certain degree of futility at having been unable to sway the minds of the leaders. Okay, we get that, yeah? This was his great remorse, caused by the sense of his own errors in the past, as well as by concern for his countrymen. Nichiren's always humility runs throughout his life, right? He recognizes that he wasn't born awakened to Buddhist teachings. He was born a fisherman's son, and he doesn't blame his dad or his family for his beginnings. What he's saying is, I'm a normal human being, and it took me a long time to come to these lights, these understandings. And so in a way, once you understand something really well, you could spend a lot of time immersed in sadness that it took you so long to get it. But that's not very productive, right? So, okay, we understand that. His, curse, I hate that word. His difficulty about this was not a product of mere self-righteousness. It wasn't because I'm so superior. How could it take me this long to be superior? Nor a mere hatred of others, but an expression of his deep regret for his country and of his own ideal. Right? How could I have done things differently? Right? The typical struggle of a parent, or an elder sibling, or a good manager, anyone who's responsible or in any way involved in the betterment of those around him. Well, isn't that you and I? Aren't we all bodhisattvas? So this is the lament side of a bodhisattva. Nichiren's certainly a bodhisattva. How many times have you asked yourself, I wish I could teach this person Lotus Sutra Buddhism, but I don't know how, or I'm afraid to try, or what if I say something wrong? Right? Same kind of struggle. Doubts. There was always for him a link between the present danger and the future destiny, between the nation's difficulties and his own expiation, and this connection was a result of his view of the inseparable tie uniting the individual to the community in which he lives. a very basic truth of mankind, and certainly in Buddhism, bodhisattva, is that none of us live a hermetic existence. We can try. We can try to close us up in a concrete building or a cave or some distant hermitage, right? And go hide from the world. But that's not a full life. That's a very parametized, tiny, self-indulgent, really, life. You're not saving anyone. Least of all yourself, because whatever contentment or enlightenment you might reach, it's incomplete. Because the truth is, we're all interdependent. The human species is an organism like a field of aspens. You know about aspen trees? It's been a while now. If you don't know about aspen trees, it's quite fascinating that all those trees in an aspen forest actually are one organism. Through their roots, they all live as one. One tree gets sick, they all get sick. Yeah, aspen forests are actually a large organism of trees all communicating with one another. They're not in, they look individual, they come out of the ground, wow, look at these aspen trees. But in truth, they're one living organism, all connected. What a wonderful analogy for human beings. We don't have roots tying us to each other, but we have karmic energy tying us to each other, right? It's like the three that are involved in a human birth. We think, you know, in Western thinking, and most of the world, we think father, mother begets child. But in Buddhism, we know that's not accurate. Father, mother, and a third entity presents itself with mother, father, child. There's three. That's why the child's karma has some of the tendencies and conditions of the mother, some of the tendencies and conditions of the father, but our own tendencies and conditions, codependency, codegeneration, right? This is why we read all the time in Nichiren about the filial responsibility, because we still carry some of that karmic reality, and not only of our parents, but their parents, because they too were children who were independent entities that melded, amalgamated to instantiate and develop this sentient mind. So you see how we're all eventually, you go back far enough, everybody's in that same, dipped in that pool of karmic instantiation. This is what Nichiren talks about when he talks about Ichin and Sanzen. That ultimately the cause for life is the same cause as the cause for universe. That's where the oneness comes from, is that we all share the same atoms, the same electrons, the same photons, the same stuff. So to think that you can be enlightened all by yourself, that's pretty egotistical, really. And just outright silliness. That's foolishness. That's greed. And anger, because anger in the context of Buddhism is a manipulation of things, right? Manipulating, backstabbing, lying. That's the world of anger. So how greedy and how manipulative and how foolish is it to go live in a cave to become enlightened? What a paradox, yeah? We are naturally designed to be bodhisattva. You do not experience things all by your lonesome. You may feel that way sometimes, yeah? But there's always an aura of influence that touches everything and everyone in your environment. On the one hand, that's really beautiful. Sometimes it can seem like too much because it makes you responsible for everything going on in that mind of yours. All the more reason to chant and align your mind with your enlightenment, Buddha-ness. It keeps coming back to that, right? All right. So the author continues. We have already touched on this point in discussing Nichiren's ideas about the meaning of the community in human life and in Buddhist practice. Now, in his grave concern about the threatening invasion, his thought found emphatic expression. A letter which he wrote to a warrior follower in 1280 is particularly instructive. After dwelling much on the offense committed by the nation against the Lotus of Truth, the teachings of Shakyamuni, true Buddhism, he goes on to show how his sufferings were a part of his mission. While he himself cannot be responsible for the people's foolishness and their calamities, the individual is never apart from his family and nation. How much more then must the leader of the nation, the spiritual father of the coming ages, regret and hate his people's folly and suffering? Further, he says, quoting Nichiren here, while Japan is being threatened by the attacks of the great Mongols, its people are having recourse to the mysteries which are doomed to perish, the Shingon rituals, right, hand positions, magic spells. Are not the ominous records of their failures plain in many previous cases? Haven't they been shown to, do not people realize when they completely fail at what their mystics say? Doesn't it make it obvious that something's wrong? People just go on, okay, tell me what to do now. Tell me what to do now. Authoritarianship isn't just horrific leadership. You could question whether it's really leadership, right? It's just ego and rule by might, do it or else. But it's also the populace that's totally willing to tell me what to do, because gosh, I don't want to be responsible. If I fail, then it's not my fault, right? It's a two-way street. How can a man who knows this remain indifferent to the fact? For Nichiren, it was just so obvious, he couldn't understand how people wouldn't get it. How sad it is that we have to encounter great calamities, having been born in a country offending and degrading the truth and the correct practice. Even if we would be personally acquitted of the errors we've made, degrading the truth, how could we be freed from the responsibility for the offense committed by our families and country, right? If you see evil or wrong or inhuman acts going on around you, if you do nothing, then you're complicit, aren't you? If you don't call out the emperor's naked, then you're just as guilty as everyone fawning over the emperor's new clothes. Ooh, he looks so wonderful. Did you see his? Yeah. If you would be exempt from the offense committed by your family, endeavor to convert your parents and brothers and sisters. Endeavor to correct them. If they continue to do what, you know, be irresponsible and do wrong, at very least you've said something and you continue to point out that you disagree, that you know a better way, a truth. Be that thumb, that sore thumb, that keeps Right? Just because they're doing wrong doesn't mean you have to go along. So he's addressing the very core of authoritarianship there. It's hard for people to stand up, own their lives, especially when the whole culture doesn't want them to. The issue, quote, going on with this quote of a letter of Nietzsche's, the issue will be either that you will be hated by them, or that you will be finally, or that you'll finally convert them all. If you would be free from the offense committed by the country as a whole, make remonstrance to the rulers and be yourself prepared for death or exile. Well, he's talking to samurai in this letter, right? Well, samurai wake up every morning prepared for death or exile. That's the life of a samurai. So Nietzsche knows this. So he's saying, well, if you're going to have value for your life other than just dying for a ruling class, an emperor, or whatever, at least speak the truth. At least live an honorable life. Isn't that the whole gig with a samurai? No wonder he converted so many samurai. It is not said in the text or in the sermon. Is it not said? Keeps saying that he adopts this old English form. I've got to believe that's the influence of Harvard in the from the late 1800s. Yeah. Is it not said in the sermon, quote, never shrink from sacrificing the body for the sake of the incomparable way, end quote. This is explained by a commentator as follows, quote, insignificant is the bodily life compared with the grave and important cause of the truth. Therefore, strive to perpetuate the truth even at the sacrifice of the body, end quote. Again, speaking to a samurai who's intimate with this idea that if your life has any value, then it must be lived fully and truthfully. Otherwise, you're just a carcass of, right? That we have, from the remotest past down to the present, not attained Buddhahood is simply due to our cowardice. In that we have always been afraid of these perils and have not dared to stand up publicly for the truth. There's a powerful statement. You could restate that as, if you're not happy, it's your own fault. Because you don't have the balls to stand up, the inner fortitude to stand up and be happy. Now, that can be misinterpreted a lot, right? Being happy isn't owning more stuff, or being richer, or better looking. We're talking again about that inner happiness, that inner to be happy is to be fully expressed in life-affirming glory of life. To be that shining light that is enlightenment, that is the potential of human existence, rather than being caught up in all of the politics, right? The future will never be otherwise so long as we remain cowards. All this is deeply impressed upon me by my personal experience. No one would argue. Even among my followers, there are those who dare not to proclaim the truth, but are content with personal resolve alone. And even some who desert the cause, all because they're afraid of the dangers. I can't chant. Somebody hears me. Now, I'm not making fun of. I've known people. I've helped practice with people who lived in situations where they might lose their abode, their jobs, the government. I had a Greek man tell me once, he goes, we have to practice in secret in Greece because it's against the law to practice anything outside of Christianity. Can you imagine that today in our modern world, that's still a truth? That's abhorrent, isn't it? But we have to work to change it. If we don't stand up to call that out, the emperor's naked, then who are we waiting to do it for us? That's the very crux of the matter. Are you going to live your life? Or are you going to be waiting for somebody to come along and go, okay, I anoint you, you live your life, so long as you don't disturb anyone. Right? What a sad life. You only have this one. Live it fully. And care too much for bodily life, which is in fact an evanescent as dew. Indeed, as it is said in the sermon, quote, difficult to believe and hard to grasp, end quote, is the truth. And I know by my own experience how difficult it is to live the life of truth, of the truth. Traitors are as immeasurable as the dust of the earth in all the world, while real, committed practitioners are as rare as motes on the fingernails. The offenders are like the waters of the ocean, while the defenders are only but a few drops of water. Those who remain silent before the opponents of the lotus of truth will surely sink to the nethermost hells. Men who, being cognizant of a treasonable plot, do not inform the rulers, are traitors, even if they themselves were not involved in the plot. There's that complicity again. Remonstrances were made by me, Nietzschean, because I knew this truth. It was incumbent upon me to say something. A sentence of death and repeated banishment were the consequences. But so what? I stood up and I said something. That's what's important. 7 years have now passed since I retired among these mountains in Minobu, wishing to be redeemed from my errors and freed from my offenses. Now that could sound odd. But again, he's referring to his inability to convince. And he sees that as a failure. You can't see it as a failure. But what Nietzschean is indicating is how committed, how he lives his life to the truth. And so, you know, that's a motivation. To understand that you have to give all of yourself to realize yourself. No half measures. To the end of his life, the author continues, Nietzschean never ceased to express these convictions in the strongest terms, but his resolve in the destiny of Japan was in no way shaken. Nor was his self-confidence. On the contrary, the dangers threatening the country and the consternation of the people only strengthened his commitment in his great cause and his own mission. In one of the writings from his years of retirement, he says, quote, so far as and so much as my, Nietzschean's, compassion is vast and comprehensive, the commitment to the lotus of the perfect truth shall prevail beyond the coming ages of 10,000 years, nay, eternally in the future. This is the merit I have achieved, which is destined to open the blind eyes of all beings in Japan, or Jambudvipa, the whole world, and to shut off the ways to the nethermost of Ichi Hell, which, as I've defined before, of Ichi Hell is simply, oops, sorry, baby, and your dog was at my feet. the Avicii Hell being just samsara, right? The constant stress and anxiety of life without instantiating Buddha-ness. Being roiled about by leaders and politics and fashion. These merits surpass those of Dengyo and Tendai and are far beyond those of Nagarjuna and Kashyapa. Whew, quite a bold statement. Basically, what Nichiren is saying is, I haven't backed down. And I haven't been bowled over. He's expressing his conviction, and it is absolutely as he says. Only the future will tell, but he's very hopeful that his remonstrances, his very life, his dedication of the truth would carry with it the charisma of that truth throughout the future. It's just inevitable. It has to happen. This is the depth of his conviction. And certainly for that, we can respect what he's saying. He can't see into the future. But what he's expressing is his own deep commitment. That it has this resolve. Yeah? Is it not true that 100 years' training in a heavenly paradise does not compare with one's day's work in the earthly world? Now, that's also a reference to those monks that would live sequestered from the public. That's not the practice. In the early years of Shakyamuni's teachings, that was the practice, because there was a need to isolate students so that they could get it, how their mind and body worked, what the nature of their commitment and how their mind works. They didn't understand then. But now in the latter day, that's all. We have that capacity. We all know that how we think is how we act. So it's not time for that anymore. It's far more engaging and cathartic to walk the bodhisattva path. And what is the bodhisattva path? It is to maintain, to chase after, to practice Buddha-ness within the populace. To affect, influence those around us to do the same. To, by example, facilitate others' search for this truth. And they will seek you out. Just be ready for it. And all that service done to the truth during the 2,000 years of the ages of the perfect law and the copied law, right? The early, the former days, the middle days, we've relabeled it different ways, is inferior to that done in one span of time in the ages of the latter law. All these differences are due not to Nichiren's own wisdom. You see, that humility is always there. Don't confuse me with some kind of deity. Don't deify me. Some of the sects out there could do well to read this. But to the virtues inherent in the times. Now, you should take that personally. Because what Nichiren is saying is, all this truth in the Lotus and Shakyamuni's teachings, I haven't invented them. They're the truths that I live within every cell of my body. But I didn't invent them. They are in the karmic construct of everything. See, that inherent Buddha nature isn't some fancy talk. It's an actual statement that every cell in your body already knows this. Just because Nichiren's pointing it out, just because that little kid in the crowd said the emperor's naked, didn't automatically make the emperor naked. He was naked all along. Don't deify me, Nichiren says. This is the time for all of us to realize our Buddha-ness. Period. Flowers bloom in the spring, right? And fruits are ripe in the autumn. It is hot in the summer and cold in the winter. Is this not the time that makes these differences? Right? If flowers bloom through 6 feet of snow in the middle of winter, you'd be like, what's going on? It's not the appropriate time. But when springs come, when spring comes, you expect it because it is the time. Just as now is the time for you and I to realize our Buddha-ness. We have the capacity. We simply need to do it. Buddha announced, quote, this truth shall be proclaimed and perpetuated in the whole of Jampadvipa in the fifth 500 years after my decease, my extinction. And it will avail to save all kinds of devils, demons, celestial beings, and serpent tribes, end quote, etc. In other words, no matter what your upbringing, your mental contortions, your cultures, your this truth will pierce right through it. If this prediction should not be fulfilled, all other things that the Shakyamuni Buddha foretold and assurances, they'll prove false. They'll prove he's a liar. Well, he's not, obviously. The Lord Shakyamuni will fall into the Avicii hell and the Buddha Prahuta Ratna or Tahoe will be burned in the infernal fires while all other Buddhas in the 10 quarters will transfer their abodes to the 8 great hells and all bodhisattvas will suffer from pains 136 in kind. How should all this be possible? If it is not, the whole of Japan and the world will surely be converted to the adoration of the lotus of the perfect truth, the conviction, the commitment to the teachings in the lotus. Flowers finally return to the root and the essence abides in the earth. Let all these merits be dedicated to the essence of the deceased master Dozen, who had once instructed Nichiren and is the earth which had nourished Nichiren's wisdom. Confidence and commitment be to the lotus of perfect truth. This letter illustrates Nichiren's idea that his best attainment should be dedicated to all those whom he was in any way indebted. But he regarded any such dedication as vain unless associated with the practice and practice as a part of the highest ideal of his doctrine, the establishment of the three great mysteries, right? Namo Myoho-Renge-kyo, the housing of Namo Myoho-Renge-kyo, the practice of Namo Myoho-Renge-kyo. Thus, preceding this conclusion, he reaffirms his own mission to achieve that great task and express his confidence in the approaching fulfillment of his ideal. And on that note, I'm going to pause again, give you a breather, and we'll continue in the next video. What do you think? Sounds like Nichiren is preparing to leave. And I know this because we're reaching the end of the book, but I also know this as we listen to him talking and writing to these samurai. And you could say it's kind of a keep on with the good fight, right? Know without doubt this teaching is the truth. Never back down. By practicing in this way, by knowing in this way, you will influence others. And that is the Bodhisattva path. You have to inculcate this thinking into your very fabric. It's not just a convenience or a ritual or a poem we recite. You have to embody this truth. Namu myoho renge kyo. Feel it on a cellular level, yeah? Have that kind of resolve, conviction, confidence when you face your mandala. Because it's just a tool. It's a tool for you to speak directly to your mind. We use mirrors all the time to adjust our superficialness. But when we use a mandala, we transcend this skin, this meat bag that we're in, and we speak directly to our experience of life as it manifests. Moment to moment to moment. I have to once again express my gratitude for you to be listening, to participate, to like, subscribe. If you can, like other patrons, you guys who support my continued ability to pay the bills and keep this channel going and the website and so on. My gratitude is you have it, but it means so much more, because the entire Sangha and anyone who meets this Sangha in the future, long after I'm gone, hopefully it'll stay on YouTube. You're responsible for making that happen. So thank you. And in the meantime, keep your practice strong. Keep your confidence high. And in that respect, you have to take care of your health. How can you have strong conviction if your health, you're ailing all the time, right? You gotta be healthy to maintain your conviction and influence those around you. Namo myo renge kyo. Thank you for that effort. Thank you for being a true Buddhist. And I will see you in the next one. All right. Be kind to yourself. Bye for now. Myo.